Support for WPR comes from Luther College in Decorah, where visitors can experience campus and learn about Luther's 60-plus academic programs, like engineering science, nursing, and music education. luther.edu/visit.
If there hasn't been anyone else quite like Sherlock Holmes, there have been other detective heroes who've built up a loyal following. Think Hercule Poirot or Lord Peter Wimsey. And, of course, there were tears all over the world when Colin Dexter killed off Inspector Morse. Equally beloved is Commander Adam Dalgliesh, the poet and policeman created by P.D. James. After a score of Dalgliesh mysteries, as she approached 80, P.D. James undertook a memoir called Time to Be in Earnest, a Fragment of Autobiography. A few years ago, Steve Paulson sat down with the surprisingly grandmotherly P.D. James to talk about her writing career.
One thing that's curious is that there are so many well-known women crime writers. Are women especially suited to write this kind of novel?
Well, we seem to be. It's a very reassuring form both to read and to write because the mystery does affirm the sacredness of life. It helps distance our fear of violence, indeed distance our fear of death. It's about bringing order out of disorder. And it's very structured, and I feel many women writers, including myself, find the formal conventions, the structure of the genre, are very supportive, so that within the form of the mystery, we can deal with very violent emotions and very violent events, which we might hesitate to deal with outside that form.
So there's great satisfaction in resolving the matter and tying up the loose ends and bringing morality back into play.
Yes, absolutely. It's almost like a modern morality play. Of course, I think it's changed very much because in the 30s, the so-called golden age, you know, at the end of the book, particularly with writers such as Agatha Christie, Eden was restored. We have this little English village going on its way, all the inhabitants rather like chessmen on a board. And then there comes the murder. But at the end, when Poirot and Miss Marples have solved it, everything is back to normal. The novel does really affirm our belief we live in a comprehensible and moral universe and that, in fact, we can solve the mysteries of life.
In your novels, people don't die from a simple gunshot. The murder is always done with great panache. Is that something that you spend a lot of time thinking about?
I think in the Golden Age, detective writers took a great deal of trouble to imagine very bizarre methods of murder. You know, this was the age when the corpse was found in a locked room with no window and no possible way of getting in or out, usually found with a look of horror on his face, of course. And if we look at a novelist like Dorothy L. Sayers, I mean, none of the ways of killing people in her novels are in the least bit ordinary. I think now we're more careful, really, to make the method of murder appropriate to the person who commits it. We're less interested in a bizarre way of killing someone than in the complexity of the motives. So that, all right, I suppose when I'm looking at my desk, they are some of them rather peculiar. But I don't think quite yes. As peculiar. I don't think anybody in a locked room with no window look of horror on their face, have I? No, I don't think so.
Have you actually seen many murder victims?
No, I've never seen any murder victim. I'm very glad I haven't. I've certainly spoken to murderers, but that was because I went to give a talk on creative writing on one of our security prisons. And among the prisoners who are always all in deep security and were undoubtedly all murderers or people who had committed particularly horrible murders, I put out of my mind what they might have done. I was very glad I didn't know what they'd done. And I spent, I don't know, about 2 or 3 hours. I was rather horrified the amount of time that had been allocated to my talk. I remember at the end of it, one of them said, well, Miss James, you and I should get together. You've got the talent, but I've got the experience. I didn't think I wanted to get together with him, quite frankly. I thought he might increase his experience at my expense.
Well, have you spent much time, if not actually seeing real-life victims, looking at photos, talking with policemen who work in homicide?
Oh, yes. A lot of time speaking to policemen as necessary and a great deal of time with the Metropolitan Police Forensic Science Laboratory. It's a very famous laboratory. We fondly imagine, as countries do, that it's probably one of the best in the world. And they are unfailingly helpful to me. Getting the scientific details right, that's extraordinarily important. I mean, nowadays our readers are so sophisticated. In the 30s, I don't think, you know, they minded if the author didn't know the difference between the uniformed police and the CID. And this was the age when the post-mortem was done, you know, by the local doctor on the couch after surgery, following which, of course, he could tell the detective more about how the victim died than a modern laboratory would be able to in 3 weeks. But, you know, our readers know far more now about forensic science, so I get a great deal of help from forensic scientists.
Why do you think the murder mystery has proved to be such a popular genre? And my sense is that it's especially so in the English-speaking world.
It's a remarkably resilient form of popular literature. I think it was in the 1800s, 1870, 1818 maybe, that a reviewer reviewing the latest Sherlock Holmes wrote, "Considering the difficulties of hitting on any fancies that are decently fresh, surely this sensational business must shortly come to a close." Well, I mean, the sensational business has certainly not come to a close, although we do have difficulty in hitting on fancies that are decently fresh. I think that I touched on it probably a little earlier when I talked about restoring order out of disorder and affirming the sanctity of life.
We've been talking about the popularity of this kind of writing, of crime writing, but my sense is that when it comes to actually talking about death, I mean, not in fiction, but in real life, that is still a great taboo for most people.
Huge, isn't it? And much so, much more so in our century than it was for the Victorians. Of course, the Victorians had to get used to it far more than we do. I mean, it's appalling to think that in those days you could expect, you know, probably a third of your children to die before they grew up. But they, I don't know, they took it in their stride because, I mean, they had all sorts of formal procedures for mourning, didn't they? And they loved to be at deathbeds and people had their last words. Now we just tidy it all away and we're all expected to die in hospitals and give no offence to anyone. And it has become the great unmentionable. It's interesting that sex, we can discuss very fully and all its manifestations and all its oddities even. But death, no. We do shrink from it. In fact, as people say, in some societies, it's almost regarded as an optional extra.
Would we be better off if we were more honest about death?
We might be slightly happier, I think, and perhaps healthier. Yes, I think we might. It's understandable. I mean, I don't think it would be very healthy to dwell on it. I don't think one should dwell on it. It's inevitable for all of us. And by the time you get my age, I'm going to be 80 in August. Of course, you know, one begins to feel, obviously, it's a great deal nearer than it was.
P.T. James talking with Steve Paulson in the year 2000. Her memoir is called Time to Be in Earnest, a fragment of autobiography.